The recent documentary, Finding the Middle Way, which looks at the history and struggles of Hmong American families in central Wisconsin, will be shown tonight at the Madison Central Library as a part of a series commemorating World Refugee Day. And we thought that this would be a good reason to resume our series on diversity in Wisconsin, which explores the experiences faced by different racial and ethnic groups in Wisconsin. Today, the Hmong experience in Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will talk with a wide variety of guests, several different guests, about the Hmong experience in Wisconsin, and we'll welcome your questions, and we'll welcome your own experiences, too. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our first guest. We are happy to have with us Matthew Brown. He is a Stevens Point native and an award-winning documentarian. His recent documentary is Finding the Middle Way. Good morning.
Good morning.
So where did this documentary come from? What drove you to shoot this documentary?
On the personal level for me, it was a coming home experience. I grew up here, and I had moved back to the Stevens Point area, and was working as a reporter at the time. And so then in a variety of experiences in my personal and professional life was encountering, stereotypes about Hmong people that I found troubling. And so that began sort of the process of exploring a way to sort of revisit that story and update the story with the goal of, educating the broader public and learning myself more about the Hmong people that lived in my community.
Yeah. What sorts of stereotypes were you hearing?
You know, people ask that a lot. I sort of, as a policy, don't repeat them. It's because I just think that's... I'm not sure where they come from, but I think they perpetuate based on their repetition. So I usually won't repeat them. Things about, like any stereotype, sort of born out of this, ignorance or insulation that people have from each other and hurtful things. I don't want to...
Right, I respect that. but when... What does finding the middle way mean?
Yeah, so the title came from our producer, Tori Jennings, who is a anthropology professor at the university. And she and I had had a dialogue about some different issues, and we were sort of where this the first idea of the documentary came from. And she, it's a concept that was referenced in a book that she liked quite a bit about the Iroquois and the French in colonial America. And so the idea is the idea of negotiating relationships when neither culture has a particular power advantage. And it came to mean in the context of the documentary something a little bit different. I think what we were really looking for were the places that people were connecting in the community cross-culturally, because we knew that they existed, and we knew that people had some pretty wonderful experiences getting to know each other. And we thought if we could share those, that people would then, would feel more comfortable, engaging each other.
Well, people can certainly see the film tonight in Madison or watch it online. I watched it online yesterday. But give us, the cliff notes. What is it that we will see with your documentary?
Yeah, so it ended up being And like I say, so we really, when we kind of set out to do it, we wanted to, and I think somewhat naively we were trying to make it, we really wanted to look at sort of the 30-plus years of the Hmong experience in our area. We really wanted it to be, and it did end up being really a story of a community, sort of the entire community. But it did end up being very historical in nature. So we start, you know, and it's sort of chronological, it jumps around a little bit, but it's sort of a woven narrative. We don't have a narrative voice in it. You know, there's not a narrator speaking over the top of people or anything. So we interviewed people, and then we put it together. So we start with the, the refugee experience, the Vietnam War experience, the fleeing to Thailand. And so that's sort of the beginning, because I think we didn't, that story's been told, I think, probably better in other films. But it's not, you know, it's such a huge part of the story and the experience. So we do start there, and then we kind of work through, like I say, somewhat chronologically through the experience of coming, you know, through different voices, coming to Wisconsin or Minnesota or neighboring communities, and then the experience of sort of what life was like living here, living in central Wisconsin.
Why did so many Hmong come to the Stevens Point, Portage County area?
Sort of initially, the initial pattern sort of had to do with where they would, so refugees were sponsored oftentimes early on by churches, sometimes by individuals. So depending on where there were sponsors, so that's why, a lot of, Minnesota ends up being a big one, Wisconsin as well. Our area is very agricultural, so depending, there were some agricultural heritage that I think was appealing. There was work available here in some agricultural trades where you didn't necessarily have to know English as well to be able to work. And so you had, you sort of had that initial migration, and then you had the secondary migration. Hmong culture is very organized by, it's a clan-based system, so people would, after they got here, they would move to where their sort of clan leaders were. So they ended up concentrating some populations in areas where they could make a life.
And what kind of... what kind of a shock was that for the Hmong, the first Hmong to come to Stevens Point 30-some years ago?
Well, so I would have been about 3 years old then, so I don't have a great recollection of the very first.
From the people you talked to in your documentary.
Yeah, right. No, I know. So the people we talked to, it was... It was a huge shock for this community in the sense that, it was a very white community. You'll see that repeated as a theme in the documentary. So this was sort of the biggest, minority. It is the biggest minority population that we have, and so it was. And going from basically, no minority population to having a minority population was an adjustment. And I don't think there was a lot of effort, maybe not right away, but over the years to kind of raise awareness and bring some insight into that. But, it was not, I don't think it wasn't a great experience. I don't think for the people that were arriving, I think there was a fair amount of, hostility that was directed, at the Hmong refugees that came here initially. Hopefully we're moving past that, I think.
Well, let me bring in another guest who is featured in your documentary. With us is Macy Herr, cultural consultant for Finding the Middle Way. She is an assistant professor in the UW Stevens Point School of Education and co-creator of Camp Pong Yu. I'm sorry, did I pronounce that correctly?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you very much for being with us. So, what is a Camp Pong Yu?
Well, Camp Pongyu, let me just first of all say that it was created as something that came out of discussions that I had with both Hmong and non-Hmong parents and just, you know, community members who took an interest in wanting their children to learn more about the Hmong culture and language. And, you know, they, I've had talks and formal discussions with people for a couple of years since I've been back in central Wisconsin. And I just decided to, you know, do some research on it and went forward with it to basically bring not basically make sure that there's something for the summer for children who would be interested in taking or being involved in such a program.
Is there some concern that the newer generation of Hmong Americans in Wisconsin are losing their touch with their culture or their Hmong identity?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's an ongoing conversation people are having. You know, of course, there's some people who are, well, let me just say that, yes, in general, with each generation, they're losing more and more of the language, a significant amount. And as far as the culture and understanding what the culture is, that's being lost as well. And so, yes, that is a great concern. I mean, I think there was a point in there, especially those of my generation, I'm in my mid-30s, who are now parents. I think that when they were raising their children, they felt as though, you know, perhaps because of the hardships they encountered growing up, that English was the language they had, they wanted their children to learn. And so it was okay in some sense that the children didn't know Hmong quite as bit. But I think that there's kind of a turnaround. You know, they're starting to see that there's a need for their children to learn Hmong.
Yeah. You know, was the, can you tell us what the experience for Hmong in Wisconsin much different today than it was 30 years ago?
Yes, I would say so. I mean, I think that one of the biggest strides that the Hmong have made is in education. I mean, there are many more Hmong people going to college now. And I think it's been said and that, I think there's data out there that shows that the Hmong are one of the fastest groups entering, I mean, refugee groups or entering college. It's at the fastest rate. So that definitely says something about the community and the direction in which they're going.
Yeah. So what is it that you hope to accomplish with this camp?
Well, let me just say that the camp isn't open just to Hmong children. It is open to all children. And I believe that we were successful in achieving that last year. Last year was the first year of the camp. And we wanted to be able to share, not only share the culture and the language, but to bring about pride about the culture and the language among the Hmong children. But also to, like I said, to share with the larger community, those who aren't Hmong, about, you know, the beautiful aspects of the culture and the language. And so we wanted that. And I think we did achieve that, even in the first year. And granted, it was only a week last year. It was only a week long. But I felt as though we were able to achieve that. Many, we did a post-assessment where many of the children said they felt prouder. You know, they were not quite as afraid to speak Hmong as they were before, and that says a lot.
Interesting. So when is it coming up soon?
It is. The first day is the week of July 28th, and this year is 2 weeks long, and so it's Monday through Thursday each week, and then ends on the first full week of August.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just bringing Matthew back into the conversation. Matthew, we did talk to you about your documentary and doing this interview with us today about the documentary and how it's going to be shown tonight and what you were hoping to accomplish with it. And you also recommended that we talk to Macy about her efforts here. I'm just curious as to why you think this was so important.
The documentary. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Matthew. I was asking Matthew why he thought this particular aspect of the documentary was so important.
Well, and the camp isn't actually part of the documentary, but I think for me, and I think when we set out to make it, I mean, we knew that a documentary is, it was a great experience, but it's only, you know, it's, you know, 73 minutes in people's lives, and hopefully they can connect to it and learn something. But I think what Macy's doing is, hugely important in the context of the culture and moving it forward. In some of the cities with larger Hmong population, there's a lot of more resources that can be dedicated to sort of cultural preservation. And in our area, we're sort of, I feel like the community is just getting into that, and I think that's where it's at. I mean, I think the being able to preserve the language is a huge part of being able to preserve the culture. So the more that people are comfortable with it and able to continue to speak it and like Macy was saying, feeling that sense of pride about the culture, I think is going to be huge moving forward. So I think for me, it's a huge positive because it's an active thing that's being done and moving forward into the future. So like I said, the documentary is sort of historical. It looks backward, and I think the camp is really looking forward, and I think that's what excites me about it.
Yeah, well, I apologize for having that misunderstanding, but that's a wonderful place to leave it. And I will, looking forward, I want to ask Macy, looking forward, what is your hope for the Hmong experience in Wisconsin?
Well, my biggest hope is that as we move forward, of course, we embrace the American experience, whatever that might be. But at the same time, also take great pride and embrace, what is Hmong. And so it doesn't have to be one or the other. I think we often misunderstand or think that we're trying to make it one way or the other, and it doesn't have to be. It can be both.
Thank you both very much for being with us. Macy Yang Herr and Matthew Brown. I'm Joy Cardine. We are looking at the Hmong experience in Wisconsin, and we are welcoming your questions for our guests. We will be welcoming in the executive director at the Wausau Area Hmong Mutual Association coming up. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about the Hmong and their experience in Wisconsin. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are continuing our series on diversity in Wisconsin. Last month, in our first installment of what we hope will be an ongoing effort, we talked with several African Americans who live in different communities in Wisconsin, from Milwaukee to Waupun, from Madison to Wausau to La Crosse. Today, we will hear from Hmong Americans who now call Wisconsin home. And we welcome in our next guest. We're happy to have with us Peter Yang. Peter is with the Wausau Area Hmong Association, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Yes, so tell us in your story, Peter. Where are you from originally, and how did you end up in Wausau?
Yes. My family and I came as refugees from Thailand in 1976. We came to Ohio. We were sponsored by a church in Ohio. And because initially we were, the Hmong were sponsored by churches, and they were kind of scattered in different communities across the country. And we were the only Hmong families in that community in Ohio for several years. And my brother, who was the head of the household, decided to bring the family to Wausau in 1983 to be closer with my other relatives who came here from the refugee camps in Thailand.
Well, and what Wisconsin has the nation's third largest Hmong population. What is it about Wisconsin, maybe Wausau in particular, that attracted the Hmong community?
I think there's a lot of things that attract Hmong people to Wisconsin, but I think Matthew alluded to earlier about the strong family ties and clan ties in the Hmong community. And when we had initially, when we had some Hmong leaders resettle in the state, we also have other families that came to follow the leaders, either from other communities in Wisconsin or from our state. And I think right now, when I look at all the families that I know, most of them move from other communities or other states to central Wisconsin or to the Wausau area, just so that they could be closer to each other and they can provide a stronger support to the families. And so that was one of the reasons, that Wausau continued to have Hmong family moving. Although that happened more so in earlier years. For the last several years, we haven't had that many Hmong families moving in to the Wausau area. No, we didn't have as many moving out to other communities. So we, I've seen that Hmong people are more stable in terms of where they live. And one of the reasons is job opportunities, too. Many years ago when we first came, it was very challenging for Hmong families to be able to find jobs. And so some of the Hmong people moved to central Wisconsin so that they would have the opportunity to work in the farms, for example, in ginseng during the summertime. Yeah. But now almost every Hmong family is working, and so they are more secure. In fact, the home ownership rate in the Hmong community in central Wisconsin is about the same as that of the general population. So as Hmong are able to get jobs and they become homeowners, then I think they are living more securely in a community. So that's what's happening in central Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, that's when you say that most of the Hmong in central Wisconsin are working, is it, and maybe this is a stereotype, I think a lot of people think that the Hmong are still working in agriculture-related jobs. Is that the case or not?
No, that it's actually not the case. When the ginseng industry was very, I guess the price of the ginseng was very high here in central Wisconsin about a decade ago. Many Hmong people tried to get into the ginseng industry by growing ginseng, but it's been a very challenging industry to get into in terms of being able to maintain ginseng and to grow good ginseng. And so many people got out of the ginseng business and are now working with local companies. And so there are still a few that are still working and growing ginseng, but for most Hmong, they are employed with local companies. And so I would say about 90% of the Hmong are working with various employers in the area.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is an open-ended question. How would you describe the state of Wisconsin's Hmong community? Thriving? Struggling? What?
Thriving, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've come a long way. And I mentioned about the difficulty of getting jobs. Now, in all Hmong families, those who are able to work are working. In many families, we have two or more Hmong adults working to support a family. One of the challenging things that we're still experiencing is that even though Hmong people are working, most of them are working in factory doing production work, which means that they don't earn as much. And so even though we're thriving, you know, we still need to continue learning and improving ourselves and obtaining new skills.
Yeah. How well have Hmong people integrated into American society?
I think, consider where we came from and the our background, I think it's been a successful story as far as, you know, the Hmong immigration. You know, if you think back where the Hmong people came in Laos, live in Laos, most Hmong did not have the opportunity to go to school to learn. And with the exception of those who joined the armed forces, the military, where they would have some opportunity to learn some, to read and write. But for the most part, you know, the Hmong elders who came here initially in 20, 30, 38 years ago, you know, many of them did not know how to read and write, not just English, but even in their own language. And so it was very challenging. And so for the last 25 years or so, 30 years, we've come a long way. So I think it's been a successful story as far as our experience coming to America.
Yeah. Are there any misconceptions that you've come across that non-Hmong people have about the Hmong community? Guess not.
Well, I'm sure there are. We haven't seen too many.
Well, you know what? Here's one that maybe I'd like you to address anyway. I'm gonna say it's an anonymous posting on Facebook because the person's using some sort of pseudonym. The comment is making reference that that he writes, I saw one woman cashing 9 federal checks at the bank and several state issued checks all at the same time. No wonder they can all afford brand new vehicles. I think he's making reference to government assistance, and address that if you would, whether the Hmong community depends on federal assistance or government assistance.
Yes. Initially, when the Hmong people first came, they did not have job right away, and so they had to depend on the government for some sort of public assistance. But one of the goals of the United States government to bring refugees into America is to make them or to help them become productive and self-sufficient citizens as quickly as possible. And so while Hmong people were initially, while many families were receiving some sort of public assistance, they were also going to school, learning new skills so that they can get a job and become productive citizens. The comment that you alluded to, we do have some experience here in our area, and my experience is that my observation is that people tend to write whatever they want to write or say whatever they want to say. That does not necessarily mean that they are accurate. And I have not seen even a single Hmong family over the years that have received so many checks and from the government. So I don't know, but obviously, I mean, for sure, we did receive some public assistance initially from either the state government or from the federal government, but that's no different than any public assistance that the government would provide to an American-born family. So we receive no more or no less, and we follow the same rule. The same rule is applied to both, I think, to Hmong refugee families as well as the general public.
Peter Yang, stand by. Peter Yang is executive director at the Wausau Area Hmong Mutual Association. He's going to stay with us through the end of the hour, and we will hear from other Hmong who live in Wisconsin as we are trying to understand Hmong life in Wisconsin during this hour. Our next guest is Der Vang, who is a second-generation Hmong woman living in Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Again, my name is Der Vang, and I'm a Hmong American woman from the Milwaukee Hmong community. And yes, I'm a second-generation Hmong. I came to this country in 1980, and my family, we first came to Philadelphia. We lived there for about 5 years. And so my first experience of life in this country was in a large city with a lot of diversity. My godmother was an African-American. I also have a godmother who was white. A lot of my friends, they were from diverse backgrounds. In the middle of 1980, my family decided to move to Wisconsin, to a very small town. And that was a very different life for me because it's the opposite of Philadelphia. You know, the town is small. You don't have the big skyscraper. We don't have the diversity like we do in the big city.
Yeah, let me jump in. So you moved to Eau Claire first when you came to Wisconsin, and that was quite the shock for you?
Yes, it was, because, again, Eau Claire is a very small town. You don't see a lot of diversity. There's a Hmong community there, but other than that, you really don't see that diversity. So it was a very different experience for me. It took me a while to get adjusted to a small life in a small town. But again, later on, when I married my husband, I moved to Milwaukee. And I had that connection again with the big city, and I see the diversity. And I remember, you know, when I first came to Milwaukee, walking in downtown, I would look at the skyscraper, and I, you know, kept walking, looking up, because I was so happy to see a connection from my childhood experience. And I thought to myself, wow, you know, Wisconsin does have a big city. Mm-hmm. And so I lived in Milwaukee for the past 25 years. I went to college here. I lived and worked here. During the day, I'm a professional working woman. But then once I leave my job, I'm a Hmong woman. That's my experience as a second generation Hmong. Because I have to work to provide for my family. I have to go to school to get a training to work, provide for my family. And then when I leave my job, I'm still a Hmong person. So I have to, and my role as a Hmong woman is taking care of my family. I'm a mother-in-law. I'm a wife. Family is important in my culture.
Yeah, you mentioned to my producer that while family is very important among culture, your son, third generation, doesn't necessarily feel exactly the same way. You said that he prefers hanging out with his friends instead. Is this a sign of something serious to you?
I think it just reflects his experience because, as a second-generation Hmong, I still have memories of my life in Laos. I still understand the experience that my parents go through. So when they teach me Hmong cultures and traditions, I still relate to that. But with my son, he was born in this country. And that's the same thing with a lot of the third generation. You know, they are born in the United States. They are more American than Hmong. And they feel more comfortable, you know, talking in English than in their native language. You know, it's because that's what they are surrounded with. However, you know, because in my house, I do, you know, I do still speak the language. They do understand me at home. They do talk to me in Hmong. But outside of the home, they prefer talking in English. And when I tell them about life in Laos, you know, it's, to them, it's like a place, a country they never, you know, see or experience before. So it's very foreign to them. And but you know, because I think that growing up as a third generation in this country, they do have their own set of problems that they deal with. You know, life in this country is very different from Laos. It's very different from the life that I grew up in. Mm-hmm. And so they have to, you know, adjust with being just a young person, an adult person, you know, finding themselves. And so I have confidence that, you know, eventually they will find out. Because, like, you know, as I mentioned, I still live, you know, I still carry some of my Hmong tradition at home. I still live like a Hmong person. And so my children see through me, you know, the Hmong traditions, the Hmong way of life.
Yeah, look at Danielle in Pewaukee on the air with us. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was just wondering if, you know, as a parent, if you feel that being Hmong, if your culture or even the language is getting lost with your children. I mean, do your children or child, son, know, speak Hmong? Or, you know, does he, when he's at home, maybe not around his friends, does he still live the Hmong culture? And do you see that in other Hmong children as well?
Dur?
Yes. My son, he still speaks Hmong at home. And you know, he even though he see himself as, he doesn't see himself as just Hmong, or he doesn't see himself as just American, but because he was born and raised in this country, he has more tied to both culture. And so at home, he would speak Hmong to me. He would speak Hmong to his cousins. And they do, you know, use both language. Sometimes they speak in English, and then, you know, sometimes in Hmong. So they're bilingual in both language. And when it comes to the culture, they don't want to just do Hmong things. They, you know, they are just like typical American teenager, young people, too. They love to do American things, too. And so I see that, you know, as a second-generation Hmong, I do see that my children are not just Hmong or just American. They are the best of both worlds. And I do try to encourage them to have both, because I realize that that's who they are. For me, it's because I have ties to my home country. I was born overseas. And so, you know, I am, and I also grew up in this country, too. So in a way, I have a connection to both worlds. When, you know, I understand, you know, because I lived both worlds, here and overseas, and I can relate to that more. But with my children, they don't have that connection. They don't have that experience. And so, however, you know, because we live in a Hmong community, you know, we still have traditions, cultures that identify who we are. Hmong is just not how you look, you know. It's not just how you look. It's, you know, it's your cultures, your language, your tradition. And because of that, I still value that in my culture, in who I am. And I still carry that in the home. And so my children, they, you know, they still keep some of the fundamental values of being a Hmong, such as, you know, respecting your elderly, respecting your parents, helping out, in, you know, in your community, in your Hmong community. Because as a Hmong person, we don't just live for our, you know, for ourselves. We are connected to our clan. We are connected to our community. And so, you know, as a Hmong person, I have to balance all those three things. And my children see that in how I live my life. They see that, you know, the parents, the mom and dad, that we are, you know, connecting to our clan. We're connecting to our community. And so later on, when they become adults, they will, you know, they will have that connection as well. That... Right now, they are still free to be, you know, young people. Because in my culture, you know, once you married, you know, go through this rite of passage to adulthood. And when you become adulthood, you have adult responsibilities to your family, your clan, and your community. And so when this happens, they cannot be helped but come back to the community, because the community will say, okay, we need you. You know, you need to come back. And so with our Hmong community, you know, when we have funeral or weddings, we still practice the traditional wedding, the traditional funeral. And we all need each other to be there for one another.
Well, we're going to have to, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there because we are running out of time for this segment. But I want to thank you very, very much for being with us.
Sure. Thank you so much, Joy, for having me.
Dervang, second generation Hmong woman living in Milwaukee. Still with us is Peter Yang, executive director at Wausau Area Hmong Mutual Association. And we have, do you have a reaction to Dur's story, Peter?
Yes. My story is Dur's story. In my house, my kids don't speak Hmong much anymore, even though my wife and I try to speak Hmong to them. What we experience is that, you know, before they start school, they would speak Hmong and... they would pay more attention to the Hmong language. But as soon as they start school, they switch to English completely. And I think that's happening in a lot of the Hmong's homes. Their children are speaking English, especially when they have siblings. They communicate in English to each other, even within the Hmong family's house. And so it's going on. And but we're trying to... teach our children by speaking to them, by showing them the culture, by taking them to Hmong cultural events so that they can learn more about the culture and the tradition. So hopefully by doing that, we'll be able to pass down the culture and the tradition to them for a longer period of time.
We need to take our break, and then we will be right back. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Kerr-Dean, talking about the Hmong experience in Wisconsin. Wisconsin has the third largest Hmong population in the U.S. We are talking about how that happened and what it's been like for the families who came to our state and how Wisconsin has treated the families who have come to our state. Let's go to Tom in Tomahawk. Go ahead, Tom. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just hope that anybody who has resentment toward these people or prejudice, whatever you want to call it, get a sense of the history of these people and our involvement with them in Vietnam. And I don't want to overstate the case, but we left them to hang out to dry when we left Vietnam, and they suffered immensely in their attempts to escape and to come to this country. And I had some at the university, and I was amazed at their determination and how hard they worked to make a success for them. And I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
I'm glad you called in, Tom. And Jerry on Facebook also says, it is right to honor the Hmong community. One reason they are here is because of their ancestors being a part of our efforts in the Vietnam War, fighting right beside our soldiers. They deserve respect and honor. The Hmong were considered U.S. soldiers, weren't they, Peter?
Yes, and that was the main reason why we were admitted to America. interested because the Hmong's involvement with the United States CIA during the Vietnam War, and the Hmong, you know, sided with the United States by fighting a war, a secret war in Laos to help slow down the communist North Vietnamese troops from moving from North Vietnam to Laos and then to South Vietnam. One of the roles of the Hmong soldiers at the time was to monitor a U.S. radar system that was installed in the northern part of Laos to monitor the movement of the Vietnamese troops in North Vietnam. So there were several important roles that the Hmong people play during that particular secret war or that particular conflict in Southeast Asia.
Yeah. Let me, from the past to the future, let's welcome in our last guest during this hour, Ruth Herr, Vice Chair of the Hmong American Student Association at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Good. So, well, first off, what is the Hmong American Student Association? What do you do?
So with the Hmong American Student Association, we call it HASA for short. We serve as a bridge between the Hmong students and the rest of the campus community so that we could educate the community about the Hmong as well as serve as a resource for our students here on campus.
Yeah, so how well do you think we understand the Hmong?
I think Madison as a city is quite diverse compared to the rest of Wisconsin, but when it comes to knowing individual cultures, I think that is the reason why the Hmong American Student Association exists. We are here to educate about our culture specifically, and not only that, but learn about other cultures from other ethnic groups as well.
Yeah, so what sorts of things are you doing to educate others?
This past year, we had various workshops, educational workshops. I think we had it once a month that featured topics such as pandao, which is like cross-stitching. It's Hmong cross-stitching, or we would have topics on religious ceremonies like funerals. We also held a spring conference this past year with a theme called Breaking the Norm that focused on identity, featuring cultural-specific topics like using cultural defense in the judicial system, the impact of shamanism on schizophrenia. We also had general topics like spirituality, poverty, and we also have community topics featuring Hmong activism in Madison and the new diversity plan that was coming up in the university.
Well, you know what? We can do shows on many of those topics you just brought up, but we're out of time for now. Thank you very much, Ruth, for being with us.
All right.
Ruth Herr, Vice Chair of the Hmong American Student Association at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Peter Yang, can you tell us in 30 seconds whether the Hmong experience in Wisconsin has been a positive one or not?
Yes, we really appreciate the support of the local community as well as the state, you know, and for the Hmong families throughout the state of Wisconsin. It's been a positive experience for the Hmong community, and we've come a long way. We make great strides, and we look forward to contribute to the state, you know, not only economically, but everything culturally, and so we're now part of the Wisconsin State resident.
Yes, thank you so much, Peter Yang, Executive Director of the Wausau Area Hmong Mutual Association. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.